This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Get charged up for action that'll shock your system.
Tell me that's not cool.
An unstoppable superhero and his crew embark on impossible missions and will bring mutated villains to justice.
When static's in the house, bad guys better step off.
Pull the plug on crime with the adventures of Static Shock. Yeah!
Welcome, everybody, to episode 274 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal. With me, my good friend, good brother, the man that controls our social media empire. It's Liam. Liam, welcome to another week here at the DCAU Review, and we are continuing with our months of reviews of Static Shock as we continue with our Len Yulee celebration, as we've not officially dubbed it. I'm just officially dubbing it that now, but our Len Yulee appreciation month, as we continue to celebrate the various episodes that Mr. Yulee himself directed. And we've got another good one this week.
Yes, we do here. And keeping in theme with last week's, it's another episode featuring the first return of Shebang to the series. We covered her debut episode last week and featured an excerpt from our chat with Len. It was a lot of fun. And here we are back this week with a review of her second appearance in The Parent Trap.
That is right, and we will be getting to our full breakdown of this episode. But before we do that, before we get into all the fun stuff, a brief programming note. We mentioned last week that we intended on playing some additional clips from our interview with Mr. Yulee, and then releasing hopefully the entire interview with him by the end of the month as a full bonus episode. This week, we had some technical difficulties that resulted in an indefinite delay on that interview. So we are looking to hopefully have that still come out prior to the end of the year. Unfortunately, we have had some issues with the recording process and the technology that goes along with that, as happens from time to time. So we are hoping to get eventually get a release date, but for right now we are temporarily postponing the release date for that. But if you did not get to check out Mr. Yulee's, the clip that we released last week was about 20 minutes about Mr. Yulee's sort of career, how he got into the business, and then how he got to working on Static. So definitely some insight there. Plenty of more great stuff that we hope to be able to release to you at some point here in the not too distant future. But just a slight programming note before we get to our breakdown of this week's episode. We, of course, will get to the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which originally aired here in the States on the Kids WB on May the 24th, 2003, meaning we just passed the 20-year anniversary of this episode's debut. And of course, before we get the official IMDb synopsis, we will, of course, remind you that this segment, as it always is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today, and you can get a great collection of various different podcasts, including the Watchtower Databases Jump on the Batwagon. Still have not confirmed if that's changing titles or if they're sticking with the title now that they've finished up all of Batman the Animated Series, but we guess we'll see together. You also get the entire Tim Talk library on there, as well as our entire catalog as well, all in one convenient place, streaming on YouTube. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today and subscribe.
Absolutely. So this is the review for The Parent Trap, not that one, written by Len Yulee, directed by ? Because neither the episode itself nor any online credits credit a director for this episode. Music by Richard Wolf and animation by Dong Wu. And that synopsis reads as such. And this is a long one, so just bear with me here. Shebang returns to Dakota to seek the help of the town's heroes to find her parents. when Koenig breaks into a chemical plant and Shebang's parents help to transfer the loot, Static doubts their innocence. Shanice's determination leads them to the truth, but can the heroes save them from their poison necklaces in time?
I feel like the point of a synopsis is to be like, you know, 1 to 2 sentences. Doesn't seem like to me, once you start getting into the paragraph area, albeit I did enjoy ending it with a question mark. You always have those cliffhanger question marks. Those always get extra points for me. However, you missed the point of being a synopsis by giving me every nitty bitty gritty detail there. So I'd give it a C minus maybe.
Yeah, there's a few other areas. Introduces the villain's name as if we already know who that is, right, in a new paragraph. So yeah, there's definitely some issues, but see me after class. We can probably with a little bit of reworking, we can work this up to an even C. But
we'll give you an extra credit assignment to work on it.
That's right. But yes, as we can get into our plot here. This episode does open up. It's the scene out of Law and Order or something. The Static and Gear are at the crime scene as another laboratory has been broken into. We find out from our police chief. What's this guy's name? He has a name. Barnsdale?
Yes, Chief Barnsdale.
Chief Barnsdale lets Static know this is the fourth chemical lab that's been broken into recently in Dakota. And as Static and Gear are sort of investigating inside, the Gear is able to notice a giant footprint into the ground. And so that puts them onto a hunt. They know it's somebody heavy and somebody very strong, as the lab was completely torn apart. And as Static and Gear are discussing who it may be, they decided to kick it back at the old gas station hideout. And after we get a fun little chase sequence, which maybe we'll talk about in visuals, where they race each other back to the gas station, we see that they're not alone. They're actually being followed all the way back by none other than the returning Shanice, aka Shebang, and she manages to sneak into the gas station. And as will become an important plot point later, sees them remove their masks. She figures out their secret identities and obviously knows who they are, as she was briefly attending Richie and Virgil's high school in the first episodes. So she quickly learns the secret identities, and she's coming to Static and Gear to kind of to get some backup, as there's a bit of a mystery afoot.
Okay, come out and don't try anything funny.
No. Funny is your department.
Shebang?
Virgil Hawkins and Richie Foley, high school superheroes. Who would have guessed? Oh, by the way, love the masks.
Oh, here.
Sorry.
You know, running after you all night made me thirsty. May I?
How did you find us?
I followed you. Personally, I think you could use a secret entrance.
Hey, if we want your advice, we'll ask. Now, why are you here?
I might need your help.
You need our help?
It's my parents. I think somebody kidnapped them. 3 days ago, my parents left to attend an important meeting. I thought security would be going with them, but now I find out security knew nothing about it.
So what makes you think your parents are here in Dakota?
We had a webcam chat 2 days ago. I recorded it.
That's right. We learn that through the magic of what looks like an iPhone before an iPhone existed, there was a telecommunication that was occurring between Shanice and her parents that she's brought to Static and Gear, that she's looking to help them investigate. She's identified that they left sort of suddenly in the middle of the night without telling anyone, especially their witness protection program security. And they video messaged Shanice from a hotel room in Dakota. She recognized some of the buildings in the background. And during their last communication, it's sort of intimated that she's not sure if anything happened to them, but it's very clear something happened to them, because their call gets interrupted by a loud bang and her father screaming. And then she has not heard from either of her parents since then. So Static and Gear and Shebang all head over to the location where they believe the video was recorded, which happens to be a hotel in Dakota. And Shanice is quick to find the room where she believes her parents were staying. They walk in to investigate, trying to do some good detective work to discover if there's any evidence left behind. And using one of Static's many powers, this one, he's able to use his electricity to create some sort of infrared light or something that can that he can see footprints with, and they locate a pair of footprints that match the footprints from the crime scene that we talked about from the first part of the episode. These rather heavy imprints in the ground, and that of course leaves Static and Gear assuming that these must be connected in some sort of way. And we learn soon after that there is a break-in at another facility that's happening. It's actually the, I think it's the Cowan Chemical Plant, which you might recognize that name by one of the co-creators of Static himself, Mr. Dennis Cowan, perhaps named after him. Maybe it's a coincidence, I don't know, but something tells me now. But there's a break-in happening at the chemical lab, and that's where we get our first reveal of the aforementioned Koenig, who is this hulking mass of a man who is really just giving the business to everybody there. And it appears to be, I would say, if you're looking for a comparable villain, maybe like a little bit of Absorbing Man, right? He's able to, he's absorbing the mass of all of these different items, chemicals, solid objects around him are just being turned to ash, dust, or just completely disappearing. And he seems to be getting stronger and stronger through absorbing it. He also is it's very established very quickly that while he is the size of a regular human man, maybe a athletic human man, he clearly has a lot of heaviness to him, a lot of girth, and he carries a mean punch, I'd say, as he is a little bit, seems to be the ground shaking around him. He's got a lot of mass, we'll say that. And so we learned that that's what's happening. He's absorbing the mass from the objects. And we get a little fight that occurs between our three heroes and our supervillain. And we get a reveal that the supervillain's not there alone, as two mech suits interrupt Static and Gear and Shebang's attempt to take down the villain. And it driving the mech suits are Shanice's parents. Of course, who else would it be?
You go!
You're strong, Shanice, but not strong enough.
It's you.
You almost got squashed.
My parents, they're inside those things.
What?
Hurry.
We're trying. These aren't easy to operate.
Heck of a reveal there.
Two big robots.
Two gigantic robots, yep. So we, during the fight, there is a, there's a, Koenig gets one of the chemicals, I believe it's nitrous oxide or one of those. So he has a canister, they bust it open, and instead of freezing him in one spot, just kind of creates a whole bunch of smoke as Static and Gear scatter. And this allows time not only for Koenig to disappear, but also for the giant robot mech suits to also somehow disappear. They just vanished into thin air, nowhere to be found. This mass of a man who you could hear walking miles, or you know, miles away.
Sometimes his feet cause like tremors, as we see when he's sort of stalking towards Gear. Sometimes they don't, but they did when he was trying to be menacing towards Gear. And then, yes, these two giant robots who are smashing through walls and fences and such. They snuck away.
They disappear into thin air, and that leaves everybody sort of confused. Why is Shanice's parents helping this man? What's in it for them? What exactly is their connection to this strange mass of a man? And we kind of get the reveal coming in our surprise third part, but not before we get a bit of a split that happens between our newly formed, loosely formed team.
That's right. So yeah, as they return to the gas station, and it was clear, obviously, from as I believe you mentioned, that Shanice realizes that she recognizes this hulking gray man, not that one. And he's also a former scientist who experimented on himself. There is a little DNA of that in there. I don't know. Doesn't matter. You already mentioned it's kind of absorbing man from the Hulk playbook too. So there might be a little Marvel in our villain's DNA this week. But yes, Shanice clearly knows the guy, knows something's afoot. And Static and Gear decide they're going to try to search the internet, because this is 2003 and the internet can do anything, as we'll find out in a minute here. But Static and Gear are going to try to do some investigating to figure out who this mystery man is. And Shanice is very quick to dismiss that and say that they need to just drop everything. And Static and Gear point out that they have to find this guy and her parents and stop all of them before their rampage continues. And Shanice is obviously very taken aback and hurt by that and doesn't want to hear the fact that her parents are helping this bad guy. But Static and Gear pointed out pretty succinctly when they say, we're crime fighters and there's crime to fight. So Shanice just doubles down, says no, they're not to investigate, tells them not to investigate any further. And in fact, threatens that if they do investigate, that she'll tell everyone their secret identities. And she storms out of the gas station.
Our house specialty, the abandoned burrito of solitude. One bite and you'll need to be alone.
No thanks.
Man, she is seriously down. I'm using my best jokes.
Maybe that's what's depressing her. Listen, Shanice, I know things look bad, but it's gonna be okay.
How's it gonna be okay, Virgil? I've spent my whole life hiding my past and living a lie, but I always believed I could trust my parents. Now I find out they're living an even bigger lie.
All I know is we're your friends, but you have to let us help you.
Okay, first off, who's the heavy dude with the skin condition?
He's... I don't know.
Rich, do an internet check on Shanice's parents. Maybe that'll give us a lead on this guy.
No, forget it. Don't bother. I'm gonna handle this by myself.
Shanice, I'm sorry your mom and dad are involved, but they broke the law.
Yeah, and we're crime fighters. We have to, fight crime.
No, but out. If you don't, I'll tell everybody about your secret identities.
She wouldn't do that, would she?
It's clear that kind of leaves Richie and Virgil a little dumbfounded, not sure if she would actually act on that threat or not. But it sort of stalemates them for a minute here, where we move into our third act, where we get a little bit more backstory here as Shanice comes to try to rescue her parents. There's a little bit of dialogue we get before where Koenig and Shanice's parents are talking, and we find out they're building him a machine that's supposed to administer the cure for this disease that he has, as every time he absorbs something, he also absorbs its mass, and he's getting so heavy that eventually he'll be too heavy to move. So he needs to reverse it, and he's threatening them to fix this machine, and tells them that they had better come through for him. And at that point, an alarm goes off as we discover Shebang has arrived and is trying to rescue her parents on her own, but she's quickly overmatched and captured by Koenig, who is just too strong to take head on. And here's where we get our full explanation that before Shanice was born, as we found out created in the test tube, the previous project that her parents had worked on was this mass absorption with Dr. Koenig, but they had eventually seen that as a sort of a folly, and they decided to move on to the project, which would eventually lead them to creating Shanice. However, Koenig couldn't let it go and decides to keep experimenting, even experimenting on himself. And he was successful, but of course, at what cost, as is often the case with these sort of mad scientist plots.
I achieved my goal. I gained the ability to absorb mass from other objects. Their atomic structure collapses, I become tougher. Unfortunately, I also ended up with some unpleasant side effects. I can't stop the process.
Soon he won't be able to move. He'll become a living statue.
That's why he stole those things, so we could build this chamber and force the cure into his skin under pressure.
Why help him at all?
Simple self-interest. Show her. If your parents don't cure me, I'll push this button. 3 minutes later, those collars will inject them with poison.
I can break those in a second.
Ah, but if you even try, they'll go off. And I'm the only one who knows the deactivation code.
You're sick.
Agreed.
And so Koenig, we understand at this point that the machine is supposed to basically, it creates such a high pressure that it can break through his tough skin and administer this cure that they've created for him. But and by the way, if that wasn't enough of if the big rock man threatening to crush you wasn't enough motivation, he's also made collars that if he presses a button or if the collars are messed with, they will inject Shanice's parents with poison. So
he's got solid death collars.
That's right. Yeah. Again, ahead of the game. We talked about it last week. You know, The Simpsons isn't the only show that was ahead of the curve when it comes to some of this stuff, when it comes to pop culture and world events. So, yes, that sets up our final little battle here as meanwhile, this is my favorite part of the episode, as we cut back to the gas station. Virgil and Richie are trying to, they've decided they're going to investigate anyway. They find a picture on a website of a company that Shanice's parents used to work for, a subsidiary of Cadmus, as we established last week. Not really, but prove us wrong.
Headcanon.
That's right. And there's a picture of Shanice's parents along with some of the other staff. And Sedek notices that one of the guys looks a little familiar. And so we find out that one of Static's powers is magical Photoshop. he takes this picture of the scientist corner, and he zaps the screen, and all of a sudden the scientist turns into the Koenig that we know. So
yeah,
they know where they are, and they know, and they get an address of this old laboratory that they all used to work in, and we're off to our final battle as Static and Gear arrive. Static goes off to try to hold off Koenig in a fight, while Gear and Shanice do their best to get the collars. Really, Gear and Shanice don't do anything. Backpack saves the day. Backpack is the real hero of this episode.
That's true. Making up for the fact that he didn't notice that there was a complete stranger hiding in the gas station when Static and Gear arrive back and their identities are exposed. So...
Yeah,
he really saved the day.
Yeah, he fumbled on first down, but they got the ball back and he put it through for the touchdown. They get the collars off, but meanwhile Static and Koenig are still fighting, and Koenig just keeps absorbing more and more. They're in this car, parking garage, and Static drops like five cars on Koenig, and he absorbs all of them. And then throws a tire at Static, knocks him down. And as Gear and Shanice try to join the fight, wouldn't we know it, it's none of our heroes really do anything to stop him. He's got too much of what he wanted, which is this hunger that he had to absorb things that was, and he's too heavy now to move. And we see him crash down through three or four levels of this parking garage, and he's now unable to move. And that's how our villain is defeated this week.
Defeated by his own inability to stop absorbing mass, a tale as old as time.
And gravity playing the biggest assist here, but yes,
It's kind of like, isn't that how one of it, which Beyond villain is it that just sinks into the ground?
The reporter guy, the tabloid guy.
Very. I thought we were headed for a similar thing where he was going
to drop into the Earth's core.
Yeah, he was just going to keep dropping and they wouldn't see him. But he is. He does eventually land, I guess, at the base of the parking garage. If you weren't quite understood by the visuals, he exclaims that he's unable to move. And he is evacuated via this like heavy metal platform thing hooked up to a bunch of chains, and a couple of different helicopters end up flying him out. So we get the verbal over top that he's not going anywhere anytime soon. So really, really driving home the point that you will not see this character again. We do get a name for him, of course, added. Is it Heavy Man? I think they give it, mm-hmm. they dub him. So he does get the name Heavy Man. But we do get a little postscript as Shanice comes up and does offer her apologies for she's saying sorry for what she said when she was flipping out and angry. She's sorry that she threatened to expose the identities of Static and Gear to the world. And Static is quick to forgive her. I thought it was sort of like a backhanded acceptance at first, but he quickly, maybe without even realizing it, has accepted it and her, as he mentions that these types of things happen when you're on a team.
Listen, guys, I'm sorry about before. When I made that threat, I would never give away your secrets.
No biggie. It was the heat of the moment. This stuff happens all the time when you're a team.
A team?
Yeah, sure. We're a team. Why not? Shanice, you're welcome to join us anytime you're in town.
Cool.
Just call first, okay?
And that causes both Shanice and Gear and Static to kind of stop in their tracks and consider what was just said. And Static does reaffirm that he is welcoming Shanice Shebang onto the team, but anytime that she's in town. But he makes one request of her, and that is to let them know, call ahead before she just shows up and drops in on them. And that is the end of our episode. So, Liam, let's start talking about our individual scores for the plot. I really enjoyed this episode for the most part. I kept my thought just kept going was how it did not feel like any other Static episode that we've covered so far. So much of the story and the plot was a departure from so much of what we've seen. And maybe it's mm-hmm. just maybe it's recency bias because we've covered so much of season one and season two over the mm-hmm. last couple of times that we've done Static reviews. That now we're in, you know, covering some episodes in season three where they sort of departed from that Bang Baby of the Week formula and we're branching off into other things. It's just metahumans now. You're bringing in this character this hero character that we didn't really have the opportunity to have other than maybe Rubber Band Man in the past, bring another a hero back and tie in her story and her parents' backstory. So you're kind of telling more of how they got involved in the work that they did. You have a villain that is, has that, you know, that tragic side to it where he was forced, and I guess not forced in this way, his hubris forced him to experiment on himself, to make himself a living guinea pig, as it were. And then because of that, he's got this tragic story now where he needs to continue to satiate this hunger for constant absorbing of mass and energy, but it's just creating, it's ultimately, it's killing him. So you get some tragedy in that, of course. Ultimately, it's what kills him. His inability to cure himself and to help himself ultimately is what does him in. And so you get a little bit of a difference in what you kind of see sometimes with some of the run-of-the-mill Bang Baby of the Week. So it's also an adult villain. So a lot of times you don't get that. And there's a lot of like, the fact that he had murder collars on his victims, like that felt way out there. Like that's stuff that I feel like very early on, you would not have seen something even implied to be that sort of diabolical and evil. from some of our villains. So in a lot of ways, it felt very different. It felt much more like a DCAU episode to me. Like, even though it doesn't contain anybody that is outside of Static's, you know, Dakotaverse, it did feel more like a cohesive episode that could fit in on, you know, substitute the heroes mm-hmm. onto one of the other shows. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was done really, really well. You know, I like the fact that we do have character growth also with Static. You know, we talked about last week, he's jealous. He was unwelcoming of Shanice, mm-hmm. didn't really get to kind of, you know, open his arms up and welcome her to the team, as it were, in that episode. So now this episode where she shows up again unannounced, now everybody knows everybody's secret identity. So we're all on the same playing, you know, level playing field. And his ability to let bygones be bygones and sort of empathize with her in the situation where she's threatening to reveal their identities shows character growth. Our hero is a hero. And at the end of the day, the Static team grew by one. So I really enjoyed it. I ended up giving it a pretty strong 8 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went just 1 point lower. I went 7 out of 10. Yeah, I think it's a really fun, solid episode. I think, yeah, it builds on the last episode. I think Koenig, as you mentioned, is a very unique, that's a really unique, even though, like you said, you can Parasite a little bit, Absorbing Man, it still feels like its own guy. And we'll certainly talk mm-hmm. about that when we get to his design as well, because that's a big part of it too. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the character and his voice actor, he has a real menace to him that maybe a lot of, especially the Static villains that are like other high school students don't really have. So yeah, I think it's a fun plot, and yeah, it pushes it forward, and we see the other side of it, where last time, as mentioned, like you said, it was more Static being resistant to her joining the team. This time it's her sort of fighting with her own nature of, you know, it's just been her and her parents for her whole life, basically. And mm-hmm. so when she feels like they're threatened, and certainly threatened with potentially Static and Gear taking them to jail for helping this guy, and she doesn't know, her first instinct is to kind of cut everybody else out and go it alone. And then ultimately, you know, it's teamwork that wins the day, as, you know, Gear gets the collars off, Backpack gets the collars off, and Static's able to keep Koenig busy long enough to save the day there. So yeah, it's a fun, it's simple idea. Like I said, the characters, we always talk about that. The characters are in a little bit of a different place than they were the last time that we saw them, and it feels like we've have a more sort of solidified bond between the three of these characters, and a promise of more to come when it comes to Shebang teaming up with Static and Gear. So that's a really solid effort all around, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's why it reflected in both of our scores. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which, as you mentioned, is going to be animation and visuals. And just as it was last week, this week's animation is by Dong Wu. And we didn't have a credited director, as you talked about, so nobody to necessarily pin this on. What stuck out with you? I guess we can start. You kind of left off with it in our last category, briefly mentioned it, but we can certainly talk about the design for Dr. Koenig, at least in his evil heavy man persona. And how he looks, the visualization of some of his powers, I think, it's an interesting topic to cover as well. But I'll throw it over to you to kind of guide us with that, and then wherever else it takes you.
Yeah. Well, my first thought is he looks like that one Pokemon. It's like a rock with arms. You know that guy?
Yeah, I know the guy. Neither of us are Pokemon guys, so I don't know his name. But
there's
yeah,
our action item for this week.
Find the name.
That's the Instagram Pokemon question.
That's right.
For this week. Or not Instagram, Spotify.
Spotify. Question. What is the name? Who's that Pokemon?
That's right. Okay, we're doing the. Remember Vine? Remember that meme?
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. I also saw a little bit of the Spider-Man villain, the chameleon in him a little bit, with the whole all white head and the sort of missing nose, or at least the kind of the way that he looked like in the Spider-Man the animated series. Mm-hmm. But he's also got the lab coat and pants and no shoes and stuff like that. So again, classic, whether it's the Incredible Hulk, whether it's Dr. Kurt Connors, aka the Lizard, it's the mad scientist vibes with the it's giving mad scientist, as the kids these days would say.
Absolutely, yeah. The lab coat, like I said, it definitely feels like there's some Marvel in this guy's DNA. But yeah, I like the look of it. And we already kind of touched on it, I think, in plot, but just the visualization of his powers, where you kind of get this when he grabs something to absorb it, he kind of you see this sort of flash of like reddish orangish energy kind of course through the thing, and then it's sort of very quickly reduced to ash. Or to minuscule debris, and he sort of his chest kind of puffs up to imitate that. And as mentioned, you have little things like that's kind of the whole point. At the end, he's too heavy to stand in the machine that's going to cure him. Like, you get a sense of this guy being very heavy. Like I mentioned, there's parts where you see the ground rumbling, and you see like rocks being kicked up off the ground just by his footsteps and things like that. So the way they visualize his heaviness, because that's the whole point of, you know, his increasing mass every time he uses his powers, is I thought really, really unique. And they didn't really rely on anything that I'm familiar with as far as like an existing one of these guys, whether it's a parasite, whether it's an absorbing man. He doesn't really take on the form of anything, but just that kind of refrain of the energy kind of shooting through the thing, and then it's sort of reducing to ash and him sort of getting a little bit physically heavier. The way they're able to visualize, because he doesn't really physically change, he's just this like 6'5" gray man the whole time, but you see the way they sort of visualize him getting physically heavier, and by the time he gets to that final fight with Static, he's really kind of lumbering because he's moving, you know, he's absorbed so much, he's moving so slow. So the they really slow him down by that last fight scene with Static in the parking garage. He's moving completely differently than he was in that first fight, and that's a good attention to detail there.
No, absolutely, yeah. That really speaks to we have to communicate this in a couple of different ways. They didn't have the advantage, as you stated, of him changing in shape or size or anything like that that would visually communicate that in the traditional sense. So yeah, kudos to them for actually going through and, all right, we're going to slow him down, we're going to add the weight via the way that he moves versus the way that he actually looks, which is, I'm sure, a challenge, especially when it's trying to be communicated between two different languages and then like overseas and back and forth. I assume it was probably via email at this point, so a lot of communication happening to try and get this right, and I feel like it was done very well. So kudos to the Dongwu animation for getting that communicated pretty well. Yeah, I liked the visualization. I will say there was some, I don't know, I would like to have seen a little bit more consistency in the way that he absorbed things. Sometimes it disappeared completely. Sometimes you saw like it sort of turned to ash and dust. It wasn't really communicated as if he was doing something different. So maybe it was supposed to be his powers where he was using his powers differently. Because sometimes, again, the thing would just completely disappear. He would be holding like the engine. There's the scene where he's eating the right before he goes into the chamber to try and get cured. He has a car engine and it just sort of disappears. But then the very next scene that he's fighting Static, he grabs onto this giant support pole and it crumbles down sort of into dust, into a pile of like sand as he touches it. So yeah, very, very odd the way that they kind of changed the way that power was manifested. So I kind of would have liked a little bit more consistency, or maybe just some exposition to explain what was going on, why it looked different from scene to scene. I didn't catch a pickup on anything at least. So maybe there was something, but I didn't happen to catch anything, but there were a couple of funny moments. I enjoyed the when Static and Gear get their identities exposed to Shebang, when they take their masks off in the gas station and then they swap masks. I thought that was a pretty funny gag. I'm laughing at it as an adult. I can imagine a kid laughing at it also. So one of those visual gags that works. We already talked about the Cowan Chemical Plant as a funny homage to Dennis Cowan also. I think the mech suits that the parents were driving, mm-hmm. they looked cool. Mech suits are always fun.
It's like sci-fi because they look kind of like, and they are built to like hold large items. So it's like you mm-hmm. could, in a comic booky world, you can believe that this would be something that these two like scientists know how to pilot. Because of like,
oh, absolutely.
Weird stuff they were doing. Like they don't have really weapons. They just have like big claw arms.
Yeah. It actually, the DNA of it reminded me a lot of the Fleischer Superman robots from the one Superman episode that we reviewed. They're built kind of classically like that with the giant squares and the rivets and all that stuff. So there might be some DNA in that. But yeah, I loved that we get the reveal that there's a root beer dispenser now in that Richie has created in the gas station. I don't know if there's an origin story episode for that, but the fact that they have the Gears constantly working on these different gadgets and some of them are just convenience and fun for them to have. But I also giggled when Shanice was like, you guys might want to have a secret entrance to your gas station as opposed to just walking through the front door. One other thing that kind of confused me and felt like it came out of nowhere is we get the, as you mentioned, the opening scene with Static and our chief of police. And the transition between that scene and the next scene, we get the Static logo sort of flash across the screen and fade in very Batman 66 style. Mm-hmm. I don't ever remember seeing that before, and I don't think it was used the rest of the episode. It was like used just that once to transition from that scene. So that stuck out.
I feel like that's like the end of the episode usually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like we'll fade out with that, with the Static logo or something like that, or maybe an act break, but not usually in just the middle of a, you know, a scene transition like that. Not that I can think of, but maybe there's a million examples of it and I'm just not thinking of it. But yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that was just something worth noting that stuck out as I don't remember seeing that too often. Last thing I'll say was there wasn't a pretty neat sequence that I noticed. And again, I think just speaks to the difference between our early seasons and then these later seasons when they changed the animation style. But that scene where Static and I think it's Static and Shanice and Gear. I don't remember if it's the first scene or the scene where she's talking about them not investigating the parents, but there's the scene where Shanice and Virgil are kind of in each other's faces. And there's this, oh no, it's definitely the first scene. It's the first scene where she's demanding that she's going to go help them. And they're like, no, we're the superheroes. And she's like, I'm going to come help you guys. And then the very next they transition to Gear saying, and she did come with us. So, but you're looking at Shanice's face and then there's like a 90 degree pan where they then kind of turn and you get Static in the shot. And then you see Richie standing right in between them. I thought that was so great. It was just a subtle little thing, creates a third dimension to the whole sequence. And again, it's just something that you probably would not have seen done because of the way the animation was in those earlier two seasons. So just another step in the evolution of how this show ended up improving and continues to improve through season 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. So bigger budget, different animation style, something more akin, makes it feel more at home to that DCAU stuff. I thought overall from top to bottom, there's some very interesting things here. The death collars were another thing. Again, the reveal of those, they're wearing lab coats that they kind of take off and reveal the death collars in that final scene. I love the little lab outfits that the Shanice's parents are wearing also in that whole scene. All of it just felt very DCAU. So went with a 7 out of 10 for my visuals. Enjoyed some of that stuff from this week's episode. What about you?
I gave it a 7 as well. May have been an 8 for me, except that there's a point where Rishi calls Static on the radio, and he's not using a shock box. He has like a walkie-talkie.
Yeah, there's also that, like a scene. There's also a scene where he's like wearing his glasses, and then he looks at Static, and they cut back to him, and his glasses are off. There's a couple of things that were a little, you know, inconsistencies from here to there.
That stuff. Like if it's clothing or something, or if it's like a quick thing. But I mean, that's like the first and like one of the more iconic gadgets that Richie's made on this show is the shock box. So, like, I don't know what is this. What are we doing? That brought it down a full point for me. That's my version of the inverted bat symbol.
Oh, strong words. I love it. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And forgive me, did you say it was Richard Wolf once again responsible for this week's music? Because a lot of it is bringing back music that we've heard before, certainly. But we also do get two additional themes, and listeners will know that I've started to come around a little bit and find a way to enjoy the music. Although it's not my taste, I do recognize it sort of as its own identity for this show. And we do get the return of the Girl, You're So Fly, You Go Girl theme song that belongs to Shanice. And as soon as it came in, I was like, awesome. They reused the theme. Like, it's her theme song. It wasn't just for that one episode. It's like, this is her theme. I know who's about to show up on the screen. It's the same thing that I complimented Batman the Animated Series for doing so well and Superman the Animated Series for doing so well. So I gotta be, you know, straight across the board here and give kudos. You're using the same themes. Fantastic. We also did get a theme for Koenig who gets a variation on the like move. I guess it's supposed to be it's like ludicrous, his move be get out the way, like a little bit like that's move, let's move, let me through, can't wait were the lyrics that I was able actually closed captioning had all of the lyrics to that song. Every other song doesn't have the lyrics to that song. Had all the words on the screen. I don't know if they were right, but they were all the words right there on the screen. So if you want to go and sing along, feel free, pull it up on the wonderful Max app and follow along. Just like have your own Static karaoke night if you'd like. But what a ridiculous idea. I would say that along with there was also sort of like a techno song that I think was supposed to be maybe like I don't know if it was supposed to be like a Daft Punk sound alike or something, but there's like a race sequence that happens at the beginning of the episode as Gear and Static are racing back to the gas station. They have a friendly competition and there's like this weird techno voice that comes over. It probably could be any house music from the early 2000s, but I just went with Daft Punk because that was probably the most popular at the time. So we'll go with Daft Punk sound alike. And then we get, of course, the Static theme, as always, where it's needed. But I ended up giving music a 6 out of 10. Any notes that I didn't cover that you noticed, or anything that brought your score up higher or lower than that?
No, I was kind of hoping for I don't. There wasn't another place to put another new song in there, but yes, the Gotta Move I think is pretty solid because when you introduce him, he's like barreling through a fence and then he's stopping a truck that's speeding towards him and all that. So I like that as Koenig's theme, and I like the return of the So Fly theme for Shanice as well. So yeah, I also went 6 out of 10 on my music score. Not enough new to get me excited about it, but I genuinely do like the shebang theme, so I was glad to hear that again this week.
Maybe we'll hear it one more time at some point before the before we're done reviewing Static episodes. But yes, I think that's enough talking about the music, Liam, as we will turn to our final category of the day, which of course is our voice actors. And we don't have a huge cast. We have a couple of people that we talked about last week, returning for this week, and one very memorable and familiar DCAU veteran voicing our lead villain. So let's go ahead and talk about this week's voice cast.
That's right. It's actually pretty limited cast. We do have Phil Morris and Pamela Tyson returning as Doctors Vale, Dolores and Jonathan. That's right. They have first names. Shanice's parents. And we do briefly have Dennis Haysbert as Chief Barnsdale. Actually, his last appearance in the series. But we have most importantly, in addition to Jason Marsden as Gear, we also have, of course, Rosalind Taylor Jordan returning as Shebang. She's not asked to carry it in the same way she was the first episode because of who we had in as our villain this week. But she certainly still has a lot to do, both in those kind of initial scenes when she's kind of amused and joking with Virgil and Rishi when they put that was a funny visual gag, if we didn't mention, by the way, when they realize she's in the room and their masks are off and they put each other's masks on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good bit there.
Enjoyable.
But yes, Miss Taylor Jordan once again as Shebang. I think she does a good job. I think especially on the second half when she has to kind of threaten them to not get involved, and then kind of that final bit there, you can kind of feel the panic in her voice when the collars are activated and Gear and Backpack are trying to save her parents. She does another good job this week.
No, I thought she did a fantastic job. She doesn't have quite the same opportunity to sort of flex that muscles we talked about last week in doing the different versions of the voice, the shy, bashful, but we do get, you know, we get more like frustration, anger, certainly some belligerence a little bit too, I'd say. And I think all of that comes across pretty strongly and just sort of hammers home that she's a very talented voice actress. So I stand by what we said last week, and this week is probably 1A if you're gonna introduce evidence for why she's a wonderful voice actress.
Absolutely. And then we have, of course, our villain this week. Never heard of him, a guy named Ron Perlman. You know it's him the moment he starts talking, but surprisingly, perhaps, he is a great menacing bad guy, and he's got like a real like just sinister undertone to everything he says. Especially, I feel like once it's sort of revealed that he knows Shanice, and I think the way that they sort of play off each other in that scene is very good. But he's good. He's threatening. He's talking about the hunger he has, and then the threatening her parents if their machine doesn't work, all the way through the end there when he's undone by his own machinations. Not surprisingly, we've talked about Ron Perlman a lot, obviously, as the voice of Clayface and other roles that he's pulled off, but very good here as well, unsurprisingly.
I think my favorite line is when Shanice goes, "You're sick," once he reveals the collars, and there's just a brief pause, and then he goes, "Agreed." Like, it's just like so sinister and just like, so what an incredibly badass response from a villain. Mm-hmm. Of just like, "Agreed, I know I'm
that's
sick."
Like Bond villain stuff. Like, it's like,
yeah,
it's one of those things where, and and credit again to our writer friend of the show, Len Yulee, for writing that line and knowing that we had the actor that could give that line and give it the exact gravitas that it needed.
Abso-freaking-lutely. Yeah. Kudos to Mr. Yulee for that line. Hell of a line for sure.
That's right. And then otherwise, of course, we just have, as mentioned, Jason Marsden as Gear and Phil Lamar as Static. Once again, they're sort of, I wouldn't say back burner, they're a little bit more active in the story this week compared to last week, where we mostly followed Shanice's character, but it's still them reacting. They get to do a little fun. We get to see them, as you mentioned, they race each other back to the hideout at the beginning. We get to see them being bros, or hear them being bros, and sort of their little bumbling when Shanice first comes back, and a little taken aback by how sort of independent she is and how she's not really used to working in a team. And then, like you mentioned, kind of the whole button that you get put on the episode once Koenig's been captured and they're sort of talking about it, and Virgil almost accidentally seemingly mentions that he does in fact consider Shebang part of the team, and how both Shanice and Gear react to that, I think, is really good. So our two leads, unsurprisingly, doing a solid job, even if it's in more of a supporting role than usual.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. Yeah, we don't get a ton, and I think maybe that, going back to the plot here a little bit, but maybe what made it feel so much like a DCAU episode is there wasn't a whole lot of static in this episode when you really look at the runtime. So much of it is set in the conversations between Koenig and Shanice's parents, the doctors, and then you also get some of Shanice sort of doing the investigating, her conversation with Koenig. So you do get static. You don't get any static Solo at all. So he's sharing the screen time in all the scenes that he's in, regardless. And it's, a lot of it, the plot is, especially that second and third act, focus on our villain. So, the fact that they did have maybe a diminished role certainly didn't take away from their performances, as they clearly continue to, exhibit what great chemistry they have as voice actors. And then, bringing in, whether it's playing off of Shebang or, Koenig or whoever, they were excellent, very unsurprisingly, as anybody who's heard us talk about their performances before, both Mr. Marsden and Mr. Lamar continue to just dazzle week in and week out.
Absolutely.
All right, so I guess it's time to drop our scores for this category, Liam. My score for this, because of everyone's fantastic performances and our incredible villain lead, I went with a very, very strong 9 out of 10 for our voice actors. What about you?
Yeah, same here, 9 out of 10. Just an excellent job from anybody or everybody in their cast. Just a great job. And that will bring us, I guess, towards our final scores here. And tallying everything up, I have a pretty strong 29 out of 40 for this week.
Yeah, and I think we only differed on our plot score as far as scores were concerned. Longtime listeners will not be surprised, but ended up with just 1 point higher with a 30 out of 40.
All right. Well, I mean, we could chat about rewatchability, and geez, I mean, yeah, duh. not only is it the second of a trilogy, spoiler alert, of Shebang episodes, but it's also, as we've just talked about for the last 45 minutes to an hour, a really good episode. So I think this is another double thumbs up.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Not much discussion to be had there. It's a fun episode. Very entertaining, feels very much at home in the DCAU, and its overall importance to static is palpable. So yeah, two thumbs up for that. All right, Liam, well, that will begin to wrap things up here. Thank you everybody for tuning in, and once again we apologize. We do have some great stuff for Mr. Yuli that we will hopefully be able to include in the future, perhaps if not for our next episode. We will eventually get the entire interview released, hopefully. But until then, we do thank again Mr. Yuli for everything that he provided for last week's episode. And thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. If you'd like to support the podcast, there are a couple different ways that you can do that. The first of which is to follow us on social media at DCAU Review, both on Twitter/X and Instagram. Join in the conversation. Let us know what you think about these episodes, static as a whole. What do you think about this Koenig villain? Lots of fun stuff going on over there. Lots of great conversations being had about not only the DCAU, but DC animation as a whole. There's stuff happening all around us, and lots of conversations being had in each and every week. So we'd love to hear your feedback on those. You can slide in the DMs, of course, too, if you don't want to tweet or Instagram or X or whatever it's called now publicly. You can also give us some feedback by responding to our question of the week for our Spotify exclusive listeners, or vote in our poll that Liam mentioned at the top of the program. We also encourage you, while you're on Spotify or whatever podcast app that you listen to us on, go ahead and subscribe to us. And if it lets you leave a 5-star review, please do so. If it lets you leave a little paragraph blurb about what you like about the podcast, please do so. And if you happen to take the time to do so, tweet it at us or send it to us in our DMs so that we can see it and say thank you personally. If you also would like to support the podcast monetarily, there's a couple ways to do that. You can either purchase a hat or a mug or a shirt from our merch store. There's some stickers up there too, I think. So check out the show notes for that. You can also subscribe to us, subscribe to the podcast, and give a monthly donation to us. We have a couple of very generous fans that choose to do that with their hard-earned dollars each and every month. So we thank them to our lovely subscribers. Check out the show notes if you want to support us, buy us a coffee here or there. We appreciate it. Liam, wrapped up with this week's episode. I believe we got one more to go for the month of September. And as you mentioned,
August, but yes.
Oh, I don't even know what month it is. See, when your computer blows up, you just kind of lose what day it is, what month it is, mm-hmm, what year it is. Mm-hmm. My computer is part of life. Come back, computer. No, we're wrapping up the month of August. And we have one more Saturday, and thus, I think, as you mentioned, it seems to me we're headed down this Len Yule Appreciation Month. We only have one option for our last episode of the month, right?
That's absolutely right, and that will be an episode. By the way, you thought that Len Yule Month only started officially in the second week of this when we reviewed Shebang last week. It actually started in week one, because you wrote that episode too. And that villain comes back in the episode we're reviewing next week. The whole month was a theme month, not just the 3 weeks. We tricked you.
Wow.
But yes, next week we were reviewing the aptly titled She Back from season 4 of Static Shock. This is the first time we've broken into that last season after all these years. And yes, Shebang returns, as does our villain, the psychically powered Madeline Spaulding, returning as well. So big culmination of our salute to Mr. Yule as we cover that episode, She Back, next week.
Awesome. Very grateful again for Mr. Yule's contributions. And man, what a one to go out on for this month of Static episodes. Looking forward to covering it with you, Liam. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
We will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.